Yesterday, I mentioned how devotees who are present with Srila Prabhupada during the period that he was translating the section of the Srimad Bhagavatam which describes the activities of Prahlad Maharaj, which of course includes the activities of Nrsimha, but actually there's more about Prahlad than about Nrsimha. It all leads up to Nrsimhadev's glorious appearance and vanquishing of Hiranyakashipu. So I mentioned that devotees who accompanied Srila Prabhupada noticed that Srila Prabhupada appeared to be particularly absorbed in this section and in the mood of Prahlad Maharaj, especially because those verses of Prahlad are very much expressive of the mood that Srila Prabhupada often himself expressed and wanted to impart to his disciples, the mood of serving one's guru, and specifically in the matter of bringing Krishna consciousness to others who are suffering in this material world due to not being Krishna consciousness. Another aspect of this Prahlad Prakyan, the narration of Prahlad, is the Devasura Yud, or the battle between the demigods and the demons, that is specifically described in other parts of the Bhagavatam, literally fighting between the demigods and the demons. That is there also in this section, how Hiranyakashipu overcame the demigods and took over the heavenly planets. Prahlad versus Hiranyakashipu, it's not exactly a battle, but in another sense it is also a battle. It wasn't a physical battle, but at least from Hiranyakashipu's point of view, he took Prahlad as an aggressor and he responded accordingly. And then there was a battle between Deva, Nrsimha Deva, and Asura Varya, the most notable and worthy among the demons, as Prahlad addressed his father, Asura Varya. Oh, that's one verse I didn't. Hitvatmapatam grihamanda kupam. I didn't include that yesterday. That title, if we hear, O Best of the Demons, we think it sounds like an insulting title, but actually for Hiranyakashipu, he probably took it as a compliment, because he was an asura, a proud member of the, or proud leader of the asuras. They don't think it's something bad. Someone who's more cultured in the Western world, they may say, oh, that person's a punk. He'll say disparagingly, but a person himself who is a punk may say very proudly, yeah, I'm a punk. You don't know what punks are. I also don't know much, actually, what they are. on having given that cue, because I'm supposed to relate this with the Nrsimha Prahlad narration, but I'm going to go off on another tangent here. I want to discuss some points of what we may call Vedic culture or Indian culture, if we want to get really broad-minded. No, let's not. I was going to say Hindu culture, but no real need to say that. And modern culture, which is very broadly speaking, godly culture against demoniac culture. Of course, many demons described in Shastra also followed much of Vedic culture. We find in the incident or the appearance of Mohini Murthy that when the demons understood that Mohini was cheating them, they didn't apprehend her or try to stop her in any way because they thought it was uncultured to argue or fight with a woman. So they followed some culture in that regard. We also see that Hiranyakashipu, despite being the best of the demons, he didn't get divorced or have his wives have abortions. Although the demigods, they wanted to abort Prahlad in the womb before they were informed by Narada. Actually, the infanticide, there is a case for that, in as much as Vidur told Dhritarashtra, when Duryodhana was born, just kill him now, save yourself all the problems in the future. Better just kill him now. He's a demon in the making. Dhritarashtra refused, and therefore we have the story of the Mahabharata, which is the main story, which is very interesting and educational. Anyway, from the generally, abortion is contraception, all these things are very sinful. But then, contraception, I don't think there's any case for. But abortion, at least the demigods, they were recommending. But in general, it's too horrible to think about. Unfortunately, we have to think about it because it's part of modern life. Anyway, I'll get around to that. The point I'm making here is that we're talking about Vedic culture. Vedic culture, if we talk about any culture, it's a very broad term. If we talk about Indian culture, what exactly do we mean? Because there are so many subcultures within India. But we could... There are some identifiable traits also. For instance, curry powder is definitely more part of Indian culture than it is part of Scottish culture. Although curry, this mirchi, it's not indigenous to India, but there are other, this lal mirchi, but there are other kinds of peppers which are indigenous to India. So that's just one example, which has got nothing to do, very much to do with anything very spiritual, but the point is that that Srila Prabhupada, he spoke a lot about Vedic culture and Indian culture and sometimes Hindu culture. Also, Srila Prabhupada wanted to promote that. He spoke of cultural conquest. One reason I'm bringing this up, this point here today, and may go on till tomorrow also, if you'll all be tolerant enough to listen to some of the things I have to say, is that there is an idea being promoted that the external trappings of the culture are not very important. The main thing is that we have to chant Hare Krishna and follow four regulative principles, and other things are external, which is true in one sense. Actually, it is true. But on the other hand, there is a whole culture that goes with Krishna consciousness. Krishna himself appeared in this world in what is now called India, and the avatars, they all appeared there. Of course, some Vamana Devi appeared in the heavenly planets. There are several appearances of course, there are so many appearances of all the different avatars, but that his appearance place has its earthly representation also in the town that is now called Bharuch, which is presently in Gujarat, and the Puranic name is given Bhrigu Kutch. So the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he appears in India, and various reasons may be understood for this. One reason is because in enacting his leelas, the culture is the culture that he likes. He has his own spiritual abode, and that is manifested in this material world, and the lifestyle, the dress, the food, it is manifest. The mannerisms and the relationships between people based on factors like age, gender, bodily or familial relationship, caste, that is the culture that Krishna, he likes to enact his pastimes in. In other words, it's intrinsic to his pastimes. Now, it has been mooted that, well, you can wear any dress and be Krishna conscious, which is true, and Srila Prabhupada also said that. But on the other hand, Srila Prabhupada, we see that Srila Prabhupada's disciples, when Srila Prabhupada was present, they wore dhotis and saris. Actually, this salwar kameez among devotees came later. Otherwise, it wasn't seen. Certainly in the temple, it was considered standard to be dressed in these clothes, and there was no question of offering arti, being dressed in, for instance, jeans and a t-shirt. Now, some idea is there, has been suggested, or not just suggested, but is being propagated, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he came, he just wore the same kind of clothes that everyone else around him wore, and we should do so also in the Western world, or wherever we are. It doesn't matter. Just wear whatever clothes you want to. And more or less, we can follow Western culture and chant Hare Krishna, and that will make Krishna consciousness more accessible to people who don't want to become Indians. They like chanting Hare Krishna, but they don't want to become Indians. Now, that is an arguable point, but according to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and according to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's, he caused the appearance of his dham within this world. Before he comes, before he manifests his presence in Navadvip dham, he manifests it within this world. In other words, Navadvip dham is not part of this material world. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Jibe Daya Kari Shapashada Shio Dhamma Shaha Avatari. The very first lines of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's collection of songs, Sharanagati, his most famous collection of songs, begins with that Sri Krishna Chaitanya, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Prabhu, being merciful to the jivas, descended to this world with his associates and his dham. Now we may argue that, well, in Navadvipa at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it said that it was being ruled by Muslims, and the Hindus themselves, most of them, were not Krishna conscious. That's the very description we get from, particularly from Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat. There is some extended description of how the Hindus living there were not Krishna conscious. Nevertheless, that is the cultural setting, the culture that was, many features of the culture that were the dress, the food, the social setup, in many ways was what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu followed. So it wasn't just that he appeared in any old culture, with the idea that cultures develop. First of all, there was nothing, then there was a very big bang, and then things settled down, and out of the primordial soup jumped up some fish, and they became lizards, and then they became apes, and then they became humans, and then they descended, and one of them became Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is not Vaishnava understanding, that the cultures develop. The first, just like this Sigmund Freud, he has given a brilliant explanation of why people believe in God, because in the early days, before people were civilized like Sigmund Freud, they went in tribes, little gangs, and the most dominant man would dominate all the others, and people respected him and feared him, and the sons respected him and feared him. And this mentality has been passed down in what Richard Dawkins would now call our memes, and that is why we imagine there to be a supreme being who's our father, who we fear and we respect. Sigmund Freud could have done some more homework and found out that the concept of God outside of Christianity, and especially in Vedic culture, is quite different to that of some vindictive, powerful father figure. So this idea that different cultures develop, that may be true from the social point of view, but there, at the same time, there is a specific culture in which the Supreme Lord enacts his pastimes. And that culture, we read the descriptions of Krishna's pastimes, and we find that that culture is the same culture that's going on throughout history, as much as we know about history. If we read about the pastimes of Lord Rama, which were millions of years before those of Lord Krishna, it's not the same yuga cycle. It's Treta Yuga, but not the same yuga cycle. So it's many millions of years prior to Krishna's advent. But we'll find it's the same culture. It's going on. It goes on throughout. Only in Kali Yuga it breaks down. And the present time we're seeing it's breaking down very quickly. Which is why it's important to discuss these things, because culture is important. Culture is not just some ways of doing things and different what kind of clothes you wear, but it within the culture is a whole approach to life, a whole understanding that goes with it. uh, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also sings elsewhere. Gaura Bhakata Priya Bhishta Dhana. He is describing in this song activities that are favorable, anukul, for advancing in Krishna consciousness. And he says that I will wear those kind of clothes that are dear to the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, although this is certainly not the most major point in our devotional life, that whether what kind of clothes we wear, but at the same time, we find that Bhaktivinoda Thakur clearly states that wearing the kind of clothes that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers wore, that is an item that is favorable for our advancement in devotional consciousness. And one reason for that, which Srila Prabhupada, he often gave the example, is that he, just like a policeman, when he's dressed in a police uniform, then it helps him to identify with the role as a policeman, helps others also. It's not that when he's not in uniform, he's not a policeman. But dressing like that helps him to feel the role, and helps others to identify him as such. And simply dressing as a policeman doesn't make one a policeman. One has to be trained, one has to be authorized. So similarly, just dressing as a devotee doesn't, although some would object, what do you mean dressing as a devotee? Some people object, there's no such thing as dressing as a devotee, but according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there is. So that helps us to identify with that role. And culture, as the anthropologists and sociologists study, the way we dress, the way we relate with each other, there's a lot of symbolism that means that, for instance, the way we dress announces to others how we consider ourselves, how we would like others to interact with us, and that does dictate to a large extent how people do interact with us. Many years ago, I remember one of our devotees, we were selling items in one Western country for the sake of raising funds for purchasing vehicles for traveling and preaching in Nepal and Bangladesh. So he would generally do so in casual Western clothes, we all did. Then one time, for some matter or other, he hired a suit, pinstripe suit, three-piece suit, whatever. And he said the way people treated me was just so completely different. There was so much respect. The same person looked the same. But the symbolism that goes with a suit is that here is someone who's respectable, probably got money, more than any. Whereas casual clothes means people treat you casually. And that's what the person in casual clothes probably wants also. Or maybe they just couldn't afford the three-piece suit, which can be very expensive. So, the Vedic culture, when we say Vedic culture, Srila Prabhupada, he used this term often. He spoke about it. He wrote about it on many occasions. He spoke of cultural conquest, that we want to introduce the Vedic culture. So that doesn't mean that we want to introduce, for instance, Kali worship all over the world with sacrificing animals to Kali. Although Srila Prabhupada did indicate that even that is better than Christianity. And on more than one occasion, as I heard it reported, he was asked, what is better, who is better situated? Someone in Vedic culture who worships many gods, and in Hindu culture who worships many gods, and they also worship Kali with killing animals. Of course, that killing animals is not slaughterhouse killing. Or a Christian who believes in one God, and Srila Prabhupada said that the Kali worship is better situated because they're in Vedic culture. And that wasn't further elaborated, but I'll tell another little anecdote to illustrate how that can be better. When myself and some devotees from the West, we were newly in Bangladesh, one Hindu, young Hindu social worker came to visit us in our rented house, which we'd made an ashram in Dhaka, in the capital of Bangladesh. And he was praising us and saying, oh, it's wonderful what you're doing, traveling around in all the villages. And he said that wherever you go, the tendency, which was very strong previously, for Hindus to convert to Muslims and Christians, that just completely stops. People get faith in their own culture. So we joked with him or whatever. We said to him, well, what's the harm if they become a Christian or a Muslim, because the Hindus they're all eating fish, and the Christians and Muslims, they eat meat, but at least they seem to be very religious in some ways. At least they go to the mosque or the church once a week, but the Hindus, they don't do anything practically. So we were arguing back and forth in a friendly way. He was getting a little exasperated. And then he came up with this. He said that, well, at least if they remain Hindus, they'll be more inclined to say Gauranga. And we accepted that. Yeah. They're open to, they may be Kali worshippers or whatever, but they're much more open to chant the names of Krishna and Gauranga and to respect persons who are sadhus, who are spiritual leaders, whereas Christians and Muslims, they may be more inclined to disrespect that, although I didn't find much of that overt disrespect from anyone during the time that I spent in Bangladesh. But there was definitely very, very much overt, overwhelming respect from many members of the Hindu community. So when we say Vedic culture, ultimately, that means Krishna consciousness, because Vedaischa Sarvair Aham Eva Vedyaha, all the Vedas lead to Krishna. So the Vedic life is meant for a purification, and or at least it saves us from those who are following Vedic culture, even if they're not Krishna conscious, it saves them from not following Shastra in any way whatsoever. And then there's a downfall. Whereas the Western culture, and again, of course, we're talking in very broad terms, but we all have a general understanding of what's meant by Western culture, that is meant for sense gratification. Vedic culture is based on the acceptance that Shastra gives knowledge. Shastra is the basis. Whereas Western culture is based on Darwinian ideas. Actually, the influence of Christianity is very strong, even among those who profess to be atheists, because it's a long-standing culture of Christianity. But the general thrust of this culture, which is all over the world, to greater or lesser degrees, and pushing itself to go further and further on, is it's based on sense gratification, with the idea that Maharaj quoted yesterday, "Kama upabhoga parama," that the topmost function of life is to enjoy sense gratification. So, obviously, a culture that is based on following Shastra and purification with the ultimate aim of Krishna consciousness, whether or not most of the members of the culture agree to accept that, that is a better culture than one that is based on sense gratification. And we may think, well, what difference does it make whether you're dressed in T-shirts and jeans, or dressed in dhotis and saris? What difference does it make? And it may not make a difference, because ultimately it depends on one's consciousness. And when I come to some countries in the world, including the one I'm presently situated in, I dress in jeans and T-shirt. I mean, jeans means not exactly the worst, or the what should we, I don't know exactly what the word is, the roughest kind of somewhat presentable style, although it required some of the local devotees to make me look more presentable, because when I first tried putting together some Western style clothes, I didn't have much idea about it. And it's not that when I wear them and I immediately feel like going out and drinking a beer because I'm dressed in Western clothes, so I should follow Western culture. So it's not necessarily that that our consciousness is dragged down by doing so, but it, again, there's some symbolism there. There's identification with a certain culture and with the attitudes that go with it. It's certainly in many ways safer for a sannyasi, especially, to be dressed in his sannyas dress. It can be dangerous being dressed in other dress. Just to give an example, I was once on a plane flying into a country where it necessitated myself being dressed in non-sannyas dress, or what we might call conventional Western dress. And in Asia, I was in Asia, not this year, I was in Southeast Asia. For at that time at least, this was quite some years ago, more, maybe 20 years ago, it was a Western male traveling in that part of the world. It was might be considered a good catch for an Asian female. So one air hostess came up to me and started to speak to me in a friendly way. And I thought, wait a minute, she's getting too friendly here. So I pulled off my cap and told her I'm a Hare Krishna devotee. And phew, she moved on. She got out quick. She moved quickly. So sannyas dress helps to protect, although it's not guaranteed in and of itself. But it is favorable. As Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur suggests, it is something. Although he would dress in magisterial dress as a magistrate, but otherwise, he would, when he specifically for going to the court, he would dress like that. Not so otherwise. And he specifically says, Gaura Bhakata Priya Vesha Dadhana Tilak Tulasi Mala Shobhamana. I will dress in those clothes that are very much liked by the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there are descriptions of that also, that what kind of dress they wear. It is specifically said in one place, Trikacha, which means the dhoti folded in a certain way. Elsewhere, Panchakacha. So, Krishna consciousness goes better with this culture, and it's not, again, it's not just a matter of dress, but there's so many aspects. Culture is that which it impacts every aspect of our life. Most people are not even aware of that. Most people are not even aware how much we are culturally conditioned. We just take things to be normal because we grew up in a certain culture and we think that certain ways of acting and speaking and thinking are normal. The British and other Europeans who went to different parts of the world, they saw other people as being savages because of the way they dressed and behaved, and they considering their own standard of culture to be the standard and others to be uncivilized. I've actually heard that said about... No, I'll go back a bit now. The idea that someone, for instance, someone who's dressed very simply is not very sophisticated or very low class. We see that the Shankaracharya of Kanchi, that previous one, was most highly respected as for very good reasons. He was very highly respected, that Chandrasekharendran, Swami Gal, as they say. But he would wear almost no clothes. That's his culture. As a sannyasi, in his tradition, just a short cloth to cover the lower part of the body. It doesn't cover all of it. I mean, it covers the loin and all this. And then some other cloth on the top, which left most of the exposed. But from our perspective, he was a highly cultured person. Because he dressed like that. Not that everyone has to dress like that, but because this was his sannyas and he embodied the tradition going back so many hundreds of years. So the idea that if people think differently or do things differently, then there's something wrong with them, that was very prominent in in the British, and in fact that was used as their justification for conquering other countries, that we're civilizing them. And although there is the phenomenon known as multiculturalism at present in the Western world, the idea that we're all different cultures and we all lived here in London, for instance, we have less than 50% of the population who are what might be called native British, and the rest are Jamaicans, Argentinians, Indian Sikhs, Bangladeshi Muslims, and on and on and on, and practically all different people of the world. Some communities are, some peoples are more than others. So we all have to live together, so we can all be different, but we all respect each other's culture, and just we have to live like that and get along with life. But still, there's very much the idea subtly presented that actually this culture, the Western culture, is the best. And that's very prominent among Indians. I haven't seen the magazine India Today. I haven't read it for maybe 20 years or so, maybe more. But I remember reading it and just being amazed at how this could be written by Indians, because it just presents the Western way of life as being better. There was, I remember seeing one article of one Sikh had gone to America to study to be a doctor, and he'd ended up playing football. American football means, I used to sometimes see it on TV as a kid, and I wondered why they bothered with a ball at all, or something, a ball. I thought, why don't they just punch each other, and what do you need this ball for? It just seems to be like they're all just, it's an extremely violent game. So it was praising him, and he said, well, I wanted to be a surgeon, but I don't think I'd be able to now because my hands are all messed up. And it praised him for his breakfast. He eats two hamburgers, and or maybe it was four or five hamburgers, and two or three bottles of Coke, and that was praising. Oh, this is great. You know, someone went from India and became so American as to be an American footballer. That how truly American he has become. This is something laudable for India. So that kind of attitude. And actually what happens is that the best or the most promising students of journalism in India, they and other countries, they get scholarships to go to America and get trained there. So they come back and they write things like that. And that very much influences the whole population, especially the English press in India, we find is against traditional Indian culture and very dismissive of what we might call Hinduism. So these ideas are being pushed through the media that actually the Western culture is, that's the real culture, and Hinduism is very bad. And in the West, I've often had the experience of people saying to me, not often, many, many times, this, oh, India, caste system. That's all they know, caste system. Oh, it's so bad, the caste system. With no idea of actually what's going on in India and the fact that they have so many social problems in their own country. But it's just promoted that. Actually, there's one book which has discussed these points in much detail, how the colonialistic attitude is still being promoted nowadays more by Indians than Westerners, because the Indians have become converts. Srila Prabhupada himself said about Pandit Nehru that he was a made in England man. That whatever the idea that whatever he said, that he was selling medicines to their family. He personally knew Indira as a young girl. So he was the family pharmaceutical salesman. So he said they would never, the whole family, they would never buy medicines made in India. They'd only buy, they should come from England, then we'll take them. So, this book, Breaking India by Rajiv Malhotra, it gives details of how this mentality is still very strong and it's being promoted so much. And Indians tend to think that everything Western is better, and Westerners also tend to think that everything Western is better. And one example he gave is that in the press, if it's reported that there's a riot in India, it's promoted as if, well, a riot in India, what can you expect? If there's a riot in America, it's promoted, riot in America, well, that's very strange. We're civilized, it doesn't normally happen. It's just so it's promoted like that, that basically we are very civilized and these people, they're not very civilized. And for that reason, we have to extend our beneficence to them if they get really out of hand, and especially if they have a lot of oil in their country. Sometimes we go and invade them just to help them to become more civilized so that they can have democracy and hamburgers and all these things, and we can maybe set up our own companies there also. So it's required, just like for the British it was required, we're civilizing these people. And in the modern age, in the name of we have to intervene so that they have weapons of mass destruction. We should not allow them to have, we can have them, but you can't have them. Or they have chemical weapons. I never really understood how chemical weapons were considered so bad, when other weapons, which also very effectively kill people, are considered somehow or other okay. If you have chemical weapons, it's an excuse to go and blast you with some other kind of weapons. Anyway, getting a bit digressed here, but the point that this, the Vedic culture, Srila Prabhupada very much wanted to promote this, that Vedic culture is actual human civilization, because it's based on, first of all, it's based in Shastra, and it's based on the understanding at the higher levels, it's based on the understanding that human life is meant for God realization, and all the everything comes from that. Everything develops on the basis of that. Whereas the Western civilization is based on crass ignorance, as Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, that even a professor in the university has no idea that the soul is eternal. And the professor will state, as if it's a fact, when the body is finished, everything is finished. They don't know even the most basic point of education, the most basic point of knowledge, that we are eternal. And we get body after body after body according to our activities. Karmana daivani trena jantur deho papatteye. On the basis of our activities, under the supervision of the Supreme Lord and the demigods, we get different bodies, one body after another. They don't even know this basic fact. So it's a civilization based on ignorance. And the Vedic culture is one which is based on factual knowledge. Of course, in Western culture, there is a lot of knowledge also. But it is all built on the premises of non-fact, that matter is materialism. Materialism means the philosophy that matter is all there is. On that basis they have developed all their knowledge. And there's not even any inquiry into what is the actual nature of being. Parabhavastavad abodhajata yavanna jignyasata atmatattvam. As long as we do not inquire into the nature of the self, all our activities simply result in defeat. So, it is a mistake to think that we can run or develop Krishna consciousness on the basis of Western culture. Because culture, attitudes, understanding, thought patterns, they all go together. Now, again, it is possible to be dressed in any kind of clothes, or even no clothes, and be Krishna conscious. It is possible. There are Rishabhdev, he is described as being with no clothes. That's part of Vedic culture, is that we, I'll come to that later, we have to follow the gurus who teach us which parts to follow. We're not going to promote that we should live like sadhus who just lie down in one place with no clothes and they pass stool there and they sit in their own stool also, which is also described in the Bhagavata. That's not what we pick up. That's not the culture that we pick up. But even that is far, the great devotee who does that is, for the reason that he's doing it, makes him highly spiritually advanced. Not that, generally if anyone does like that, they're considered to be a madman in the mode of ignorance. This culture is important because it helps to reinforce our way of thinking. It helps also to prepare us for the spiritual world, in which, although some may argue otherwise, but there are no baseball caps. And there is a danger in identifying ourselves with the Western culture. You may not feel it so much because all of you are living, the culture you live in is a hybrid of Western culture and Indian culture. And you're able to accommodate your Krishna consciousness to some extent within this culture that you live in, only to some extent, because basically the way of life you lead is not conducive to Krishna consciousness. The whole work culture that you're locked into is not conducive to Krishna consciousness. But when you're not at work, you can put on tilak and dress in certain ways, and in your home you can worship Krishna, and you do so. So there are some aspects which some essential aspects that you can follow, and some essential aspects that you can't follow. For instance, to always be in association with devotees. because of the world culture that you're in, you're not able to do that. So, devotees in the Western world who propose that, well, we'll do the activities of Krishna consciousness and in other ways live largely as Westerners, there is a danger in that. It is very difficult to live like most Westerners because most Westerners eat meat and drink wine, and apart from drinking alcohol, much less spiritually dangerous or even materially dangerous intoxicants such as coffee and tea. And of course, most Indians drink either tea or coffee habitually also. But even within the Western culture, even if we try to adapt ourselves to that, and there is definitely a case and a good case for adapting ourselves to that for the sake of mixing with people and infiltrating Krishna consciousness to them. But still we're going to have to be different in many ways. We won't be... If people invite us to their... How far do we go if they invite us to their daughter's or their birthday party? And we can't go. And you say, well, I don't drink. And say, well, just... Okay, we'll get some soft drinks for you. Still we can't go if we're going to be Krishna conscious, because the people are all going to be just talking nonsense, which is what they always do, because they don't know anything else. And then, and it's not a... not a conducive situation for you to be Krishna conscious or present Krishna conscious to them. One unfortunate result of this idea that we try to be like normal Westerners in many ways and be Krishna conscious also. One devotee who is propagating this, who's actually a sannyasi, but he thought it proper and suitable to play volleyball dressed in shorts with women devotees on the other side of the fence, the net. So with the idea that, well, you see, we'd just be more normal and then people can relate to us better, but I hope I don't need to explain that this is not a very good preaching ploy, or even if we think it's a good preaching ploy, it's not helpful for us in Krishna consciousness, especially not for sannyasis who are supposed to show a model of ideal Krishna consciousness at the highest level. This ball, that ball. Srila Prabhupada included, thank you, Jai Vanmaj, for reminding me of that. Srila Prabhupada included ball games, sports, idle sports, among the four prohibitions. He included that among gambling. So we should promote Vedic culture. Srila Prabhupada often spoke about Indian culture, which are or have been largely synonymous, because Vedas have been on this planet, have been followed mostly in India. Previously, the whole planet was Krishna conscious, or following Vedic culture, according to Srila Prabhupada. That may be a topic of research. There are many, many, many points to be researched and explained. but particularly that land is praised within Shastra, in most of the Puranas and in Srimad Bhagavatam. That land between the Himalayas and Setubandha. Actually, Setubandha, which is near Rameshwaram, that is considered the, not Kanyakumari, which is geographically the southernmost tip. Setubandha is considered the southern, or the limit in that direction. That's where the, what is called the Indian Ocean, which in Puranic language is called Ratnaka, meets with what is now called the Bay of Bengal, which is called Mahodati. And if you go there, you can see the two seas. You can see that they come, that there's a distinct difference. So the land between Setubandha, which of course the name comes from the bridge which was built there by Lord Rama, and the Himalayas on one side, and between Bengal, West Bengal actually, but that means Ganga Sagar on one side, on the eastern side, and on the western side up to the Sindh, which is now mostly in Pakistan, Sindhu River, which is mostly in Pakistan now. So this land in particular is glorified as being the best place for spiritual culture. The demigods, they desire to take birth in this land as it is most beneficial for spiritual culture, or even for pious material culture. Therefore, it's sometimes known as Karma Bhumi or Punya Bhumi. It is a land in which Vedic sacrifices can be performed. Vedic sacrifices have to be performed in pious places. And the land outside of this is considered impious, which is why in some part of the Shastra it's stated that if one goes outside of this land, if one crosses the sea, then he becomes a mlecha. Yes. Still, some people want to follow that. There's not much, but in Madhva Sampradaya, there's still some idea that the sannyasis shouldn't go outside, and in the Kanchi Shankara Mart also, there's when the present Swami Gal was talking of going to China, then someone said, you can go by walking. That's all. You're not allowed to use any vehicle, and you're not allowed to cross the sea. So if you want to go to China, you can go, but you have to go by walking. Time's up, is it? Okay. Hmm? Oh, was it? Oh, I thought it was up to 9:45. I wasn't going to take questions and answers because I want to go on tomorrow. And if there are questions now, then it might, they'll bring up questions which are likely to be covered. Whew. I'm going to need more than two sessions for this. I better speed up somehow. So, Indian culture, Srila Prabhupada often spoke of Indian culture. At the same time, we should know that much that is in modern Indian culture is not Vedic culture. And some obvious examples are Bollywood and Tollywood and all this. Those are, what else is there? Konkaniwood? What were you going to say? Collywood. Oh. What else? And it is a major part of Indian culture. I mean, it defines the culture to a large extent. Interestingly, it does also largely promote some of the older traditional values in some ways. Just like you see the people in the movies, they'll offer respect. The regular social roles of elders being respected, that's also shown. Some things like that. Hindutva, what nowadays goes on as Hindutva, that is not the Vedic culture that Srila Prabhupada wanted us to adopt. Sai Baba, not Vedic culture. And Amma, no, actually, Amma is Vedic culture. But this, the hugging, yeah, hugging guru who goes by the name Amma means simply mother, that's all. So the culture of the mother, respecting the mother, that's very much Vedic culture. But and if we want to narrow the spectrum, then even the Shankara Math, which I spoke of twice already, that's also not the pure Vedic culture, because pure Vedic culture is Vedaischa Sarva Rahameva Vedaha, Krishna consciousness. So we can say the pure Vedic culture is the four sampradayas of Vaishnavism, pure Vaishnavism. But on the other hand, the traditional sadhus and sannyasis and smartas, even in many ways they do, if there are still some here and there who do follow the culture as far as they can. They do uphold the culture. There are still people in South India, maybe some in North India, more in South India, who they still only use their own well water for puja and all this kind of thing. But it's very difficult to do so in the modern age. some years ago, I was in Sri Rangam. I was there. There was one festival, and one at that time he wouldn't be young now, but there was a young boy. Young boy means early 20s, I guess. He was called among all the elderly Brahmins who was there. He was called at one festival to recite the Divya Prabandhas, which is high Tamil prayers to the Supreme Lord, to Vishnu. He was called to do that because he did so very nicely. And I was also called to be present, and it was very pleasing, devotional festival. Later, when I asked about him some months later, I was told he's in America as a computer engineer. And I asked why, and he said he didn't want to go, but it's just the family situation, because the government has taken over the management of the temple, and when you have sisters to get married and you have to pay all the bills, this and that, then you can't... The stipend that the government gives to a brahmana, it means you can't live, so you have to go and use that intelligence, which was previously the brahmanas would use for studying shastra. So you use that for computer skills, so you can get enough money to renovate your house and this and that, whereas the government would prefer it falls in on you and kills you, and then they'll put some... Anyway, I shouldn't say, I'd get arrested for saying what I was going to say, but someone else as the priest, they would like that. I also heard that when he was in America, he would go to work every day with his full tilak, red, white, and he would have his huge shika. Then the company sent him back to Bangalore and they told him, you can't come to work like this. Just see. So, we should know what is actual Vedic culture and not just think that everything Indian is spiritual. And there may be some aspects of Western culture which are laudable. For instance, punctuality. As Srila Prabhupada, we have the quotation that 7:30, on time, punctual. And suddenly, in the modern world especially, to be punctual is a good quality. It's not very much part of traditional village culture anywhere, because there's mostly people didn't have clocks. You don't know what time of day it is, and just look up at the sun. It's It's morning time. What time will the program begin this evening? This evening. There's no time in particular. Time means when everyone comes. When everyone's come and settled and they come, then we'll begin. Like that. I had a lot of difficulty adjusting to this. So, in the sense that utilization of time, ayusha kshana ekopi nalabhya swarna kotibihi, one moment of time that is gone cannot be brought back, even with thousands of millions of gold coins. So, appreciation of the value of time, even materialists. So there are some good things. But many of the things which are promoted in Western culture as being the evidence of Western culture being so advanced, in Srila Prabhupada's estimation, were not at all. For instance, democracy, which Srila Prabhupada called demon crazy. You never heard that before? Demon, crazy demons. Srila Prabhupada, he said that to have one good kshatriya who can take charge, that is far better than having dozens of people sitting, discussing. One person who is trained, who knows what should be done, who has the qualities to be a kshatriya. Equal rights. Srila Prabhupada was not for equal rights. This, in the modern world, the idea of equal rights, it's considered almost sacred. So if one speaks against the concept of equal rights, you're considered, just because you don't accept that, you're considered to be a dangerous fascist, it's considered to be an axiomatically almost divine principle. So all equal. But Srila Prabhupada is very much for a hierarchic, a specific hierarchy in human society. That means varnashram, brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra. And not equal rights. Equal rights for men and for men. Actually, if you even say equal rights, it's almost, the term equal is almost, within the understanding of that, it's almost redundant. Because if you have the concept of equal rights, then if you're not equal, then you don't have rights. But the idea is that, well, everyone should be, I believe this is enshrined, they use the word enshrined in the American Constitution, that everyone should be allowed to pursue the human happiness as far as possible. American citizens are supposed to know that. Isn't that part of being, if you become an immigrant in America, you have to learn the American Constitution or something like that, is it? You don't know. Sorry?
Constitution, big
document. Oh, is it? Oh. Anyway, the idea that in the United Nations Charter of Human Rights, we take it as self-evident that all humans have equal rights to this, that education. In India now, there's this right to education, RTE, is being promoted. It means get all the kids in school, and then we'll have plenty of cheap workers. The philanthropists are promoting it. They can all work in the factories, and they can be our accountants and our engineers, and we'll take away their land and build factories on it. And so this is called the progress of human society. But people, they really believe there's progress and equal rights. Everyone thinks they're right, whatever ideas they have. And if they're powerful, they think that they have the right to enforce it on others. Hitler thought like that. The communist, Stalinist regime, they thought like that. Well, communism, that's obviously the best, because everyone's equal. So we have to promote that all over the world, and not just promote it, but we have to send in our army. And this idea that the human rights, democracy, we have to promote, we have to force people to, if people don't agree with this, then they are fit to be killed. If anyone's the leading a country and he doesn't believe in democracy, then he deserves to be assassinated. It's not written in anyone's polity, but it seems to be a policy. So this idea that there's so many good things in Western culture is superior because of democracy and equal rights and women's rights, gay pride. You know, that is gay pride. They have big marches in the Western countries. All the homosexuals, lesbians, bisexuals, transsexuals, and all kinds of things. So we are not in favor of this. I hope when I say we, I speak for more than myself and Jai Vedaswar. And maybe I speak as well. It's supposed to be our movement. Okay, well. All right, I'll stop there and continue tomorrow, Krishna willing. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.